You know, guys, when you get to be our age, finding the motivation to get back in shape can be hard. It's just plain tough to find a routine and to stick with it. Good news. FitBod is a fitness app that is anything but routine. It tailors your workouts to fit your life, your goals, your gear, and even your schedule, so you can avoid burnout. And FitBod helps keep up your momentum by mixing in different exercises, reps, supersets, and circuits. Best yet, FitBod has over 1,000 demonstration videos, so you can learn the right way to do each exercise. It's time to ditch the boring routines and kickstart your fitness journey. Add FitBod to your workout essentials. Join today to get your personalized workout plan. Get 25% off your subscription or try the app for free at fitbod.me/zabe. That's fitbod.me/zabe. Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges. And they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Today on the Zabecast, why sit on my ass watching the combine and just guessing wildly as to which quarterbacks might be any good next year? Why not find an expert or something close? I did, and you'll hear from a guy who threw D1 missiles himself and has coached many of these young men. All of that today, plus you will not believe who is now a paid subscriber to the Zabecast. Bonus 1% me is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
Monday, March 4, 2019. Thank you for downloading. Today, we have essentially a wing joint confidential. Although it's just me and a guy you're going to meet in just a minute. It's not a four-person free-for-all. And even though it was a bit loud in that particular wing joint I went to, it turned out pretty good audio-wise. I think you'll be satisfied with the audio. And I apologize. I picked this restaurant thinking it'll be kind of quiet on a Saturday at noon. But no, lo and behold, we hooked into some sort of youth sports awards lunch. And so there were lots and lots of screaming kids. But I think you'll enjoy it just fine. Before we get to that, Twitter is the worst. I know. Go ahead, groan. How many times do I have to hear this? Just quit. Just quit it, Zabe. Stop complaining and quit. I can't quit Twitter. I mean, I could, but I don't want to. Because here's the thing. Too many people see it as real currency. And the fact that I have what I consider to be a modest 53,000 followers or thereabouts, that is helpful to me in certain ways. It makes me a little bit more than just a schmuck. It gives me no real power. I make $0 and 0 cents off of Twitter, but at least I'm a little bit further up there than some other schmucks out there in the media. And I don't give a shit about it, but other people might, including people who could be in charge of hiring, who could be in charge of giving me access to someone or something. They look at these numbers and they buy into them. It's the most insane thing ever, but it's the world we live in. That said, I do need to get better at just making sure I'm using Twitter, that it's working for me as much as possible and not the other way around. There is an excellent piece on the website Quillette, Quillette, like quill of a pen, Quillette.com. And the title of the piece is called Twitter's Micro Slavery. Powerful word. Exaggerating a little bit? I don't know. This writer, Alec Cameron Orrell, does an incredible job of paralleling mental slavery. You know, he compares Twitter to mental slavery. And before you judge, just read it and get back to me. It's called Twitter's Micro Slavery. Alec with a C, Cameron Orrell on Quillette.com. In the piece, and there is so many things I was highlighting, I said, well, I'm not going to read all these. It'll get tedious on the podcast, but let me just read one juicy paragraph. He writes to say, today, Twitter stands as the premier destination for anyone with a particular accusation or just an accusatory grudge against his society and fellow man. Let me pause right there. In the piece, he talks about how Twitter and all social media is engineered and designed, including Facebook, to gin up emotions to stir, quote, engagement, because a disinterested or dispassionate user of Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc., is not a very lucrative one for the tech giants in Silicon Valley. They want you angry. They want you jealous. They want you to use, as this writer says, your lizard brain to be fearful, scared, angry, and just, yeah. Then you keep going for that engagement. And it builds their numbers, and they sell ads off of it and everything else. Okay, so he says that Twitter is the premier destination for anyone with a particular accusation or an accusatory grudge against society. I saw a tweet from Rob Domofsky, who covers the Green Bay Packers, and I think I've had him on the show once or twice, and I believe I like him. And I believe he does a good job of covering the Packers and the NFL. But this tweet he sent out was so enragingly stupid. It got me to rethinking everything. I was like, really? This guy thinks that way? Basically, Rob pointed out that he was in an airport and heard some American, presumably redneck, he didn't call him a redneck, but heard someone say, $3 for a Coke, lick my crack. Because he didn't want to pay $3 at the airport for a soda. $3 for a soda, lick my crack. And then proceeded, the same guy who said that, to mock someone else and their foreign accent. And Mr. Domofsky ended the tweet by saying, this is why the rest of the world hates America. Anecdote plus wild generalization. Peacock your feathers of righteousness and just cup your hand to your ear and wait for the digital applause. Oh, you're so right. You're so right. We're the worst. Luckily, many people jumped in to go, so this is one person. Do you not know that other people in other countries are also rude and also maybe mocking us in their native tongues behind our back? And why does this one incident negate all the other acts of kindness that might be exhibited or put forth by Americans? Oh, I saw an American wheeling an elderly woman who couldn't speak English down the entire gate concourse. And it was a wonderful moment. It's just an anecdote. Anyhow, the problem for me with Twitter is that I couldn't then just move on from this. I got pissed off, which is what they want. Got pissed off at Mr. Domofsky, and I was like, now, okay, because I'm pissed off. I'm like, what are you doing? You're just trying to, you know, perpetuate a stereotype about Americans all being stupid. And, hey, man, you got a funny accent. So I'm reading the responses, and I'm finding that a number of people agree with me, like, that's a stupid tweet. And I'm like, yeah, give it to him. Give it to him. Kept reading, kept scrolling. Before you know it, I'm turning around and going, what am I wasting my time on this for? Let me continue with the paragraph. On Twitter, the jealous, resentful, cruel, bored, cowardly, oversensitive, manipulative, suggestible, destructive, and mentally ill find their anti-paradise, a rich Valley of Hinnom, I don't know what that is, H-I-N-N-O-M, in which to whip up or join in fear-juiced lynch mobs so they can all get their collective fix watching some unfortunate burn. Those who used to pack around the executioner stake now just reach into their pockets and tap the little blue bird. Twitter is the epitome of sadness and banality, a virtual prison packed with inmates abusing each other to display dominance and to ease their Jones. That is some fantastic prose right there, Mr. Oral. I recommend you read the whole piece because it lays out and draws parallels in multiple different ways in which you have to say to yourself, he's right. So I must reaffirm for myself a recommitment to make sure I am using Twitter only in my best interests and only for promotional purposes. And I don't give a shit what people say about me on Twitter. Or if I start using Twitter more as just a, hey, there's a new blog post up. Here's what it is. Hey, here's a new podcast up. Here's what's in it. Hey, I'm going to be at this restaurant for my local show. Come on by and say hello. I'm going to not give a shit if someone responds, not a lot of funny jokes on here lately. Oh, I guess this is how your Twitter feed's going to be all. Just self-promoting stuff. Yeah. That's pretty much it. Then there was another tweet from another guy who I like well enough. And he's a football writer. I won't name him. But he did one of those things where he puts a period after every word as if to lecture you on Twitter. This period sentence period is period the period smartest period thing period. You'll read all day. Period, 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 period. The point he was making, though, was about NFL players. He said to sports writers and media members, stop asking NFL players who might be smart and have diverse interests if they, quote, love the game of football enough. And that tweet pissed me off just because of the whole period thing and the arrogance upon which it was sort of delivered. It could have been delivered such as, I think too many times we fall into a trap of asking players who have other interests whether they love football or not. We should keep an open mind. That would have come across as better. This was a sort of lecturing way to say, you people are dumb and you don't appreciate that there are many smart football players who have lives outside of the game. Problem is, and I did respond to him, Doug Farrar is his name. I don't care. I'm fine with Doug. I've had him on before. I did respond. I couldn't help it. I just said, well, the problem with most busts in the NFL is they share one common thread. And that is they don't really love football that much. They may love the lifestyle. They may love the money. They may love the idea of it. They may be good at football, but they don't love it. Almost all busts share something along those lines, unless you are a drug addict or unless you are injured, you can't play. Another tweet that got me just sort of riled up. sitting there in the home theater watching games, really not even watching the games. That's another problem with Twitter, is that my attention span has gone completely to shit. It's hard for me now, don't laugh, to sit and watch a sporting event with nothing in my hands. And it's hard for me to just focus on the game. Okay. Cover that guy. Shoot. Oh, man, that's a foul. It's getting harder and harder. I need a detox big time. And with that, we segue into football talk for today. I met up with Paul Troth, T-R-O-T-H, who is an Elite 11 coach, and he's going to explain to you, if you don't fully understand, what the Elite 11 competition is all about. And we talk quarterbacks and football and a wide variety of things, including just random through all the major quarterbacks expected to go first, second, third round, and get his thoughts. We are here at the appropriately named Coach's Corner in Purcellville, Virginia. I have with me Paul Troth, T-R-O-T-H, yep. ECU Pirate quarterback for 3 years, Paul?
Yes, sir.
And 1 year at Liberty.
Yeah, I'm a flame.
And now you are coaching at John Champ High School in nearby Aldi, Virginia. But more importantly, you have been with the Elite 11 quarterback competition for how many years now?
7 years.
7 years.
And then actually was an Elite 11 quarterback in 98.
The first year that they started Elite 11?
Okay. Year, yeah.
So give us the background on this Elite 11. I think a lot of fans are like, oh, yeah, I've heard of them, but right. I don't kind of know what it is.
So easiest answer to start would be it's American Idol for high school quarterbacks.
Okay.
I mean, it's a cult following. If you have a 15, 16, 17-year-old quarterback in high school, if there's a good chance they know about it, because it's a competition put on by Student Sports.
Student Sports is what?
Student Sports Magazine is just a high school publication online now, but used to be a magazine that would get the word out about high school athletes around the country. Andy Bark is its owner, and it was kind of his baby. And then from his idea of exposing high school athletes around the country, he developed an idea just to, hey, let's have a quarterback competition where we select the best 11 and we get them premier coaching, whether it's from Bob Johnson, who was a legendary high school coach in California, and then it morphed into Steve Clarkson for a couple of years, but now its head coach is Trent Dilfer, and we bring those kids in, and we try and go from 24 that we have selected from a bunch of regionals in the spring and whittle it down to 11 quarterbacks. Actually, 12, as I told you earlier.
Right.
And then we try and find
you guys are like the Big Ten. There's not actually 10 teams
Correct.
In the Big Ten.
Correct.
It's the Elite 11, but yeah. You take 12.
Yep. You got to take.
Go figure.
We got to have two quarterbacks on our 7-on-7 teams is basically
okay.
How that went.
So. All right. So basically, and it's for rising seniors in high school.
Yeah.
Nationwide.
So yep.
And all these kids want to make the Elite 11, mm-hmm. and you guys are out there looking for
Correct.
The Elite 11. You have had through the Elite 11 quarterback competition just about everybody who is anybody
yeah.
in the pros, right? Yeah.
Whether they have come as a counselor while they've been in college. So even Drew Brees, we say he's Elite 11 because he was a counselor when I was an Elite 11 quarterback.
Yeah, he didn't compete. That was
right.
before his time, but he
right.
was there as a counselor.
Right.
Okay.
And so there's a fraternity that has developed over the years where, you know, we say, you know, 20 of the last 21 Heisman Trophy winners that are quarterbacks have been Elite 11 quarterbacks. You know?
20 of 21. Who'd you miss?
Oh, man.
Do you know the guy
no,
that you
no,
missed?
No, off the top of my head. But then, thank goodness, like, guys have bailed us out like Tua and, you know,
yeah.
Tyler last year.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the quarterbacks in this year's yeah. NFL draft. And it is the Saturday. We're here on a Saturday. Where they're throwing today.
Right.
The quarterbacks are throwing.
Right.
Except Kyler Murray is not throwing.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
I think there's some merit to not throwing. I mean, Sam Darnold didn't throw last year.
And what's the worry about throwing at the combine?
See, I actually think that some guys think it's not a worry. It's I want you to see the real deal, the real show at my pro day. Now, that's how they might spin it. Obviously, there are some guys that have worried in the past, and they're not comfortable.
But Haskins will throw today.
Yeah, Haskins will throw because I think lately with the Murray buzz, he wants to put everything to rest and say, you guys forgot about me. And I, you know, my measurables are good and I can fit the ball here and there. And he's a competitor.
Okay.
You know? I think the Murray distractions with the measurables, the baseball or football, I think his camp would probably just like to control something at some point and it'd be his pro day.
What do you learn as a coach from a guy throwing at the combine? Everyone's in shorts.
Right.
Don't have helmets on.
Correct.
There's no defense. Like, what can you learn?
I think you can learn their preparation. So what have they been doing since December?
Okay.
You know, a lot of guys don't play under center. So if they're exposed on a seven-step drop, that's something they could have been working on for 3 months. I think at a combine, you're not used to certain receivers. So are you adaptable? I think the whole league is how can you adapt, right? And if you can create a situation where they have to adapt in a short amount of time, then I think you can whittle it down to who you would like to have as running your team.
One thing about the combine I never fully grasped was, do they have a actual metric for arm strength? Because they always talk about he's got plus arm strength, average, not quite. How do you – why don't they have a test to measure it?
I don't necessarily think you could because
why don't you get a radar gun?
Yeah.
Why don't you say throw it as far as you can?
Well, throw it as far as you can. I mean, we can chart the plays last year, but I guarantee you most 65-75% of the plays are only 35-yard throws.
So that doesn't really matter?
No.
Okay.
No, but anticipatory throws, I would argue there's not enough of that at the combine. They're not ever throwing through windows. They're not making them throw over layer balls over defenders. I would much rather see them.
Is there a way to simulate that?
I think you could only put, you know, stand-up, you know, targets that they're not throwing at, but they're layering balls over.
What about that goofy obstacle course at the Pro Bowl?
Pro Bowl?
Is that useful at all? Would it be useful at all?
No. You don't want to turn it into like a circus.
Okay.
But maybe it is already. I don't know.
Okay. So when it comes to arm strength's important, but it's not the end-all be-all.
Nope.
And it depends on what situations you use that arm strength.
Yes, I would say extending plays and maintaining arm strength would be much more valuable than standing in the pocket and throwing at 70. I mean, you look at Mahomes, a lot of his wow plays are out of the pocket and the ball is 60-plus yards.
Right.
That's – you can't coach that. You know, that's just God put his hand on you. And to the point where if you're extending plays and your arm strength is good, yeah.
Was Mahomes Elite 11?
Unfortunately, no, in terms of he wasn't picked and he wasn't a counselor. So I don't know if we can claim him. But he did work with
Jordan. How'd you miss him?
He's probably playing baseball in the spring, man. He's right. Which I encourage, by the way. I think when you start to look at the best quarterbacks over the past years, it's the multi-sport athletes.
Well, especially so Mahomes did play baseball like his dad at a high level?
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't play in college.
Okay, but he played high school.
I think he got drafted, or definitely probably got drafted, but yeah, high school.
So you got Russell Wilson, Mahomes, and now Kyler Murray.
Right.
That baseball-football combo for a quarterback seems like a pretty good one.
Yep, and Drew Locke, who could have played at Kansas State and a bunch of Big 12 schools for basketball. That's why he's my favorite.
Okay, we're going to go through all the guys here in
just a
second.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kyler Murray is not going to throw, but he will have a pro day in which he will throw.
Okay.
Right?
Yes. He's going to.
And when he does, what are they going to see?
They're going to see him showing you his best throws. Hopefully he has a guy. Now, the question is, who's running his pro day? Like, you know, I know Drew Locke and Jared Stidham have Jordan Palmer. Dwayne Haskins has Quincy Avery.
Palmer, the former.
Yeah, former Redskin.
Yeah.
Yeah. He used to tell me he used to hunt after practice in the deer stand out by the practice field. So out there.
We got plenty of deer for him to hunt.
Yeah. But I think Kyler is – I saw him working out with Antonio Brown, and his dad is running his training. So his dad's a famous high school quarterback, college quarterback, and he's kind of like this – you know who Kyler Murray's dad is. He played at A&M, and he coaches quarterbacks also in that state. But that'll
be interesting. I've heard some people say that, Kyler Murray's dad's very involved, and Robert Griffin III had a dad who was very involved – The only difference is Robert Griffin's dad had no athletic background or pedigree. Kyler and I don't think he was Robert's best interest. advocate in best interest all the time.
And Kyler Murray, there have been issues in the past of high school, and you know, you're going to deal with Kyler and his dad. And I mean, the Dan Patrick meltdown, that was
the Dan Patrick interview with Kyler Murray. Was that a big deal to you that he was not able to at least dance around whether he'd play football or baseball?
Yeah, I think either it's bad on his part for not having prepped for the interview, or it's bad on his part from having a bad camp, not giving him the right information to
saying, here's what you're going to say, because the first thing he's going to ask is, what are you playing, baseball or football?
Right.
Are you would you be worried about him in that he was straddling the fence, that literally up until this year, he was ticketed to play baseball?
Correct.
Period.
I don't think he's straddling the fence now.
No, not now.
But there hasn't had any adversity. There hasn't been a bump in the road. Everything's been awesome. So we don't know, like, we don't have anything to draw back on at Oklahoma where he struggled. Or let's say he went through a four-game stretch where he was awful, and he's like, yeah, I got to come back from my junior year or go play baseball. The kid's so talented. He's avoided really any setbacks and struggle. So the question is going to be, when he does struggle, week 12, when they're 4-whatever, and, you know, they're dogging on him, is he fully committed? And that's the question you have to ask for a lot of these kids. Do they know how to own a playbook? Are they committed? You know, it's a 24/7 job as an NFL quarterback.
How much, if you're worried that Kyler Murray might be a product of an offense and Lincoln Riley that has now produced back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners.
Yes.
And he is considered a very innovative, incredible offensive mind. How much do you worry that it's Lincoln Riley more than it is Kyler Murray?
So last year I would have debates with friends of mine, and I would just say I am all in on Baker
Mayfield. About Baker, okay.
Yeah, because here's the deal. Not only did the kid bet on himself once, he bet on himself twice.
Baker did.
Yeah. And I can see where he's had a setback, meaning –
He got tackled by a cop.
Right?
That's a setback. Yeah.
And he was an all-star player in the state of Texas, and he didn't get a scholarship coming out of there, and there's a chip on his shoulder.
Sure.
The only I don't know of a setback for Kyler, but I do know of some chips, right? I mean, everybody's going to knock his height, and he seems to have a chip on his shoulder with that, which he responds well to. But other than the height, he's never had an issue of being the best guy on the field. Now, are there outliers? Physically, yes, he is an outlier. It's going to be a question of how can he handle adversity. So I have had experience with him when he was 18 years old. He handled adversity a certain way. He's not that way anymore. I don't know him, but maturity is a lot from 18 to 22. Yeah. So
does height, I mean, 5'10 is not terrible. At least it's 5'10.
Correct.
But does 3 inches, I don't know what 3 inches looks like. I don't understand how that could make that much of a difference.
See,
3 inches.
And I love saying I don't care about height on a quarterback anymore. And it's not, and some people will say throwing lanes, and some people will say, you know, you're in shotgun. My argument would be, if you go watch an NFL football game, the guys that do it the best with the least amount around them are the guys that can throw from different arm angles. And off platform.
Like Mahomes.
Who's
all up and down.
Yeah, all up and down. There's that baseball. I mean, both of those kids, they have thrown, turned two plays. They've thrown deep in the hole on shortstop. So they can throw from different arm angles. And that's where I don't worry about Kyler. And honestly, it's the age-old question. If he gets out of the pocket, is anybody going to catch him?
Right.
Right?
Would you worry more about body type? Because some guys, like RG3, was described as having a sprinter's body.
Correct.
And thinner, you know, longer legs. And guys like Russell Wilson are stockier, and they run fast but more choppy.
Yeah. So my boss, Trent Dilfer, he has a phrase, thick-jointed guys.
Like thick-jointed.
Yeah, thick-jointed. He likes,
is there a joint measurement day at the combine?
Thick-jointed guys. Guys with big knees and big wrists and big hands.
Right.
Kyler has that. Baker Mayfield has that. Lamar Jackson doesn't have that.
Right.
He is not thick-jointed. And I would argue that Kyler's body is a lot more prepared than
to take the punishment.
To take the punishment, probably, than Lamar. But Lamar is, I would say, I mean, Are they better run? I don't know. They're different runners. Like, Kyler right. looks like a jitterbug. Lamar's just gliding, you know?
Kyler Murray is such a spectacular, elusive runner. I'm very much looking forward to wherever he lands in the NFL.
Right.
Because it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it will.
But you don't know how quick does a player like that flip the switch from, I made my first read, and oh, crap, the pocket is caving in. I'm just going to run.
Right.
Because that's what I've done my whole career.
So the argument by us old dinosaurs who can't run like Kyler and we sit around and we just are amazed is how many quarterbacks that have won the Super Bowl have been running quarterbacks. I don't classify Russell Wilson as a running quarterback.
He's a scrambling quarterback?
He's a scrambling that extends plays quarterback. But I don't know
a true running quarterback. Yeah, he's running it 12, 15 right, times a game.
Right. I mean, you might have to go back to saying if Mike Vick ever had gotten to a Super Bowl, would he have been a running quarterback?
Yeah.
Yes. But to the point where I'm arguing is eventually you got to make a throw on 3rd and 10.
Right.
Right. And I told you that before. Eventually, they're going to dial up the right defense. They're going to have you contained. 3rd and 10, you got to make a throw. Can you do it?
Yeah. So that said, your general thoughts on Kyler Murray, how high do you think he will go, and do you think he's got a good shot to be great on Sundays?
I think he has the possibility of climbing all the way to 1 just based off of what the Cardinals did with their coaching staff. I don't think he's a number one pick because based off of some other things I've heard, and I agree with some analysis that he wouldn't even be the 3rd best quarterback in last year's draft.
Right.
So,
but Kingsbury, I guess, loves him.
Loves him.
Because he saw him.
Right.
And that's the system in the league.
And if you hire Kingsbury, you're hiring a scheme, right?
Right.
So I think he can be drafted pretty high. I think he will be the first quarterback taken. Now,
really?
we don't know what happens today with the – I haven't seen the throws, you know, and you
If Haskins kills a popcorn vendor with a bad throw, then who knows where he's going to go.
And then who knows what happens with what the trades go out with free agency and all that. In regards to a true pro, I'm concerned, right, because it goes back how fully focused are you?
Right.
How much have you struggled? And are you in a position to – totally embrace what it means to be an NFL quarterback.
Right.
I would argue that if those things are a concern, then you need to go with Haskins because he's eats, sleeps, breathes it. He's not necessarily always been the most talented kid athletically on the field, but he is the most talented arm, in my opinion, in this draft.
All right, let's talk Haskins.
Okay.
Best thing Haskins does is?
Place of the football. I mean, we're talking, I need it here. He puts it.
Front shoulder, back shoulder. High, low. And is he a good anticipatory thrower?
Yeah, he has to be because in the pocket, the stats prove that, you know, when he's pressured at Ohio State, his completion percentage drops. He's not the fastest guy, but he anticipates well. He knows what he's seeing when he throws it. There's sometimes when you – other guys, you're like, I don't know how you saw that. And that guy says, yeah, I don't know how I saw it either. I felt it. Right.
And it came to me at a moment's notice.
There's a combo of just he's a death by a thousand cuts guy.
Okay.
You know, he is going to.
Does he comp to anybody? Because, you know, Stephen A. Smith made the gaffe of saying, I think he's more of a runner, which he absolutely is not.
Right.
In part because he's black.
Yep.
Is he comp to, say, Byron Leftwich?
No, he's way better than Byron.
Way better,
He's twitchier than Byron.
Twitchier.
I think that he comps to Jared Goff.
Okay.
I think you could comp him to,
athletic enough, but not fast.
Correct. And then what do we – I mean, who just won the Super Bowl? Tom Brady. I mean, he's not anything close to being athletic, right?
Okay.
So I would say he's close to a Goff. I think he's way better than a Trubisky, you know, in terms of throwing the football.
Trubisky can run probably a bit
more. He can run.
More,
he's thick. You know, he can bang a little. Honestly, he's very similar. He's probably a better Kirk Cousins, in my opinion.
Okay.
You know, mentally, he is going to walk on the field and think he can throw it.
Yeah.
Right? Where we thought, why wasn't Kirk taking that shot? Why?
He exploded Haskins this year, though, as the year went on.
Right.
Like, I'm not sure if he didn't have the kind of back half of the season he had if he'd be being talked about as the number one quarterback taken.
Right. Right. And you are concerned, is he a Mark Sanchez? Is he a 14-game wonder? Because the stats come out and they do say, they do support, unless this kid's going to go and be developed, and you throw him to the fire, Geno Smith, a Mark Sanchez, the amount of playing football matters. It's just by osmosis, right? Like, I play enough football, I get better.
All right, I've got four more names on the short list of QBs, and then if there's a couple that you want to include, we can do that as well. Okay. But the four I've got, and I don't know if this is going to be the sequence or not, or how they're rated, but Drew Lock from Missouri, Daniel Jones from Duke, Ryan Finley from NC State, Will Greer from West Virginia. So, who do you want to start of those four next up, since we've talked Kyler Murray, Haskell?
So I think the most, the one that could probably be the closest to where the Redskins would get would be Drew Lock or Daniel Jones. I know more about Drew Lock, so let's talk about
him. Let's talk Drew Lock. So, big kid. 6'5". Big kid.
Yeah, big kid. Has come from a environment where he's always had to compete, and he embraces it, but he's a dual sport athlete. Like, he literally could have played in college as a starting college basketball player in the Big 12.
Really?
Legit.
That athletic.
Oh, yeah. Like they, my buddy who trains him told me a story where literally every game would start, jump ball, tip, get it to Drew, take a three from the corner, it's going in. Right?
Now I'm going to go watch YouTube highlights of Drew Lock in high school.
And there's a certain swagger about him that he appreciates being underrated. But he has the strongest arm in the draft, okay? He's done more with his college career than either of those first two guys, right? So you can back it up with the body of work. And he can play that naked bootleg game and be a threat to run. You know, he's perfect for Jay's system.
Okay.
You know?
But what's the downside on Drew Lock? There's always a but.
He's a little risky with the football. You know, he's a gunslinger.
Jay Cutler risky?
Not that risky.
Nobody's that risky.
No, nobody's that risky.
Rex Grossman was Jay Cutler risky.
Yeah. And I would also maybe think, you know, Drew Lock hasn't had a lot of setbacks in his career either. You know, I don't know when he struggled. But, again, he's just always been the most talented kid on the field. And
so, of the next four guys, you like Lock the most over Jones,
in terms of guys who I think are going to go in the first round.
Okay.
You know, Daniel Jones is obviously climbing.
And all right, so let's talk Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
Big guy.
Yeah.
And what does Cutcliffe do well developing quarterbacks?
His quarterbacks know the why behind a play, and they know when and where to take their shots and how to protect their coordinators. That is
Protect
your coordinator.
Explain that one to me.
If I call a shot play.
Give me a play call.
So let's just say we're going, you know, double post inside the 25. It's a touchdown check down rule. If you got the touchdown, take it, right?
Otherwise,
check the ball down, right? Okay. Give me another down to play another game, right?
All right.
Cutcliffe's guys know how to do that. That's the same reason why people get frustrated with Eli Manning, right? Think about it. He takes his shots, but he takes his sacks, right? And there's merit to that, right? It's not flashy,
right?
But at least I'm protected as a play caller, and I know we're going to have the football.
And that's the why of a play.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. The why is, okay, this is why we're calling.
Why are we running this play, and what are your priorities on the play?
Yep. Okay. So, and people call it different things. He's a game manager, or there's nothing wrong with that, right? But they're going to be fundamentally developed. They're going to know football, and they're going to know how to protect their coordinators. So Cutcliffe guys, that's kind of how I define them.
All right. What about Ryan Finley at NC State?
I don't know too much about him other than I know he transferred from Boise, so you could refer to that as a struggle. He responded well. I thought he maybe should have came out last year.
Okay.
You know, I thought he's one of those guys where he fits the old mold of he's big, he's strong. He's athletic enough from the film that I saw to deliver off platform and get out of the pocket, but he's not going to wow you running the football. Accuracy could probably improve upon, but I don't know a ton about Ryan other than big, strong kid, fits the Daniel Jones mold and old school quarterback.
How about Will Greer?
So Will and I, you know, we have a personal relationship. We're from the same hometown. I've had an opportunity to work him out. If the Redskins are second round, third round, they need a guy. He's another guy that's can fit in Jay's system of doing exactly what he needs to do. He can go bootleg, he can go naked, he can get outside, throw off platform. His arm's strong enough to have those piercing throws.
Okay.
The thing about Will is, this is all he's got left in a sense that he's married, he has a young child. Football means more to him at this moment.
Is that a positive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
he's committed.
It's either this
or selling insurance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because he's already had a setback. He already got in trouble at Florida. Right. There's not really any more room to. I'm not a kid anymore.
Right. Right.
This is a business. And the last time I talked with him, that's the vibe that I got. It's like, hey, yeah, I'm excited for my senior year at West Virginia, but I gotta start making some money. I gotta start providing for my family. And in terms of being starry-eyed and awestruck, he's just not that kid, because if anybody knows who Will Grier is, his brothers are more famous than him. They're internet superstars.
Right.
Nash Grier is like, I don't know, it's some crazy following he has on the internet.
That is the weirdest thing.
Right. Right.
They're internet stars.
Yeah.
And not athletes.
And that's the nature. It's crazy that that's the nature of the sports world we're dealing with now, right?
Exactly.
It's crazy.
All right. What about, we got a couple of legacy kids.
Right.
Kyle Shermer from Vanderbilt.
Yep.
Pat
Big joint
Shermer's
guy. Big joints.
Son. And then we got Brett Rippon.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Mark Rippon's nephew.
He's his nephew.
Yeah.
And he is, I would say Rippon, you could fit him in the mold of, he's going to know exactly what to do with the football as well. He's already been around it, exposed to it, whether it's through his uncle. Boise State's a solid program. The things that I've heard about Brett are extremely accurate. You're concerned with, you know, his competition, his level of competition in the WAC, but size fits the mold. You know, he would be another guy in the third or fourth round that if he's there and you want him and you like him more than Grier or you like him more than the other guys, he's good. Is he better than Josh Johnson? Obviously, he's younger, but is he better? I think Shermer is an interesting story because we wanted to take him in the top 24 when he was coming out. He just wasn't – he was like a newborn colt, but you could tell he was going to be that – thick body kid, thick joints, big hands. Dilfer loved him.
Yeah.
And it was the hardest decision because we had to tell Shermer, hey, he didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
But there's merit to being that guy that's been around pro football, right?
Sure.
There's merit to that.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. That's
you don't
for
have
sure.
to learn how to be in a meeting room. You don't have to learn what the head coach is thinking. You don't know. You don't have to figure out hard life lessons of this is a business.
I bet if you're a kid who's been around pro football, just seeing other players work out.
Correct.
Makes an impression on you.
Correct.
How hard they work out, how often they work out, how early they work out.
Yep.
Film study. It sinks in more, I think, if you go, wow, this is what big league sports is all about.
And it's the terminology, right? It's you're not going to be confused on when you hear flank or drive. You're not going to understand. You know, when you hear flank or drive, you're understanding exactly where that.
Well, you're probably now, these kids today, I'm betting, are in their dad's iPads looking at plays.
Yeah.
Am I right?
I would guess.
Or film.
I would guess because it's so easily accessible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kids all, you know, nowadays kids are always on their iPads. They're doing that and they're also, you know, doing social media stuff.
Yep.
Okay. Let me ask this about quarterbacks.
Okay.
Are comps, meaning, I think this player looks like that player who was good in the NFL.
Right.
Or maybe he looks like this player who was bad in the NFL. Are those useful or are those, in your mind, as a coach, a waste of time? Like, if I want to squint and see Russell Wilson in Kyler Murray, is that a mistake?
Yeah, because I think you're negating each of them's uniqueness, right? I think It's hard not to do, right? We do it with a lot. We do it with our own kids, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but I think you do Russell Wilson a disservice to the things that he's been able to overcome and excel at, and then you do Kyler a disservice because he's an anomaly. You know, he's an outlier in my opinion. And so you want to fit certain guys in certain molds, and that's in the quarterback world, we've lived in that so long that that's what prevented us from finding talents like Kyler Murray in the past. You know what I mean? Like
saying he doesn't look like anyone else, and so therefore he can't play because he's not 6'3". Right.
If Flutie lived nowadays, I mean, he lives now. Yeah. What I'm saying, if he played nowadays, we'd be having the same comp, right? Yeah. You know, very easily.
Flutie was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I remember watching him with the Bills. He actually came into Charlotte when I was living down there for a Monday night or Sunday night game. One of the Sunday or Monday night games, and to watch him in person run around and just sling it.
Right, right.
I mean, shrimpy little guy.
Right.
5'7"?
Five, I don't know, 5'9".
Ridiculous.
Maybe, I don't know.
Like that.
But you want to squint, and do you want to squint and see Russell Wilson, or you want to squint and see Johnny Manziel and Kyler? Because you very easily could.
Well, Manziel is a complicating one because of the off-the-field stuff.
Correct.
See, I kind of thought Baker Mayfield had a lot of Johnny in him.
Way
but
different.
Didn't.
Yeah. And Johnny grew up, never needed anything. Son of oil.
Wealthy, yeah.
I mean, Baker's not struggling. You know, he afforded to go to, you know, walk on it.
But you said Baker had his adversity.
Yeah. He bet on himself twice.
Right.
Right. And that is, when he did that, I just said, you know what? I'm not doubting this guy because being able to control a locker room, being able to have guys buy in, but also having confidence in yourself. Says a lot, right? It's just, especially when you've had setbacks.
Right. And swagger is easy to fake.
Yep.
And anyone can have it, but you've got to back it up with making the throws.
Yes.
Baker Mayfield makes throws.
Yep.
He has made throws as a rookie where you go, wow.
And any undersized quarterback, just look at their mechanics. There's a certain way that they throw the football, and if it fits, then I don't worry about them. Meaning,
right.
any young kid – if they lift the ball, they're kind of pushing it. But if a kid can stroke it, right, like you see any other, like taking a ball back, if he can have that with hand size,
yeah,
I don't worry about it.
But what's weird is that some quarterbacks, I mean, Phillip Rivers obviously is incredible, probably a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
He looks like he pushes it.
He does.
I have no idea how he can play in the NFL with his motion.
Right. When you slow it down, he has a little backstroke.
Right.
But his elbow, the rule is your elbow's got to get at least even. He gets it right.
Even with your shoulder?
Even with your shoulder.
Okay.
His elbow is slightly above there. And I love
it. It works, by the way. I mean, I love the whole package of Phillip Rivers.
Yes.
He's one of my favorite players.
Yes. And I love the story that he tells on why he throws the way he throws. He says,
what was the story?
I was a son of a football coach. So the ball bag is always laying there. And I'm 5 years old. Only way I know how to throw is a certain way, right? So then I throw and I throw and I throw. And that,
meaning he was throwing
the biggest,
full-size footballs
yeah.
as a little kid,
yeah.
and so the only way he could do that was to kind of lift it?
Yeah, push it. Yeah, it's
so
a great article. I think it's an SI for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, I read that article. I was like, that's awesome. But again, Phillip Rivers is not Phillip Rivers because he shot puts the ball. He's Phillip Rivers because he's the son of a football coach, and that's his osmosis.
I don't have any data on this, but it seems anecdotally – we're getting fewer and fewer egregious mistakes in the NFL draft at quarterback. We're not going to have, I don't think, another Ryan Leaf. We're not going to have another the Raiders guy that was out of LSU.
Oh, Russell, Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah, Jamarcus Russell.
Mm-hmm. I think
it seems that way.
Right.
But, no, we'll see how this last year's class pans out. And they didn't really have a great year, the four of them.
Right.
But are we getting better at the state of the art, Paul, of figuring out, yes, this guy can play in the pros, this guy can't?
I think, not to toot our own horn, but I think the development of quarterback play has gotten better from the high school ages up into college. And then from college, now you're dealing with coaches in the NFL who are willing to buy into the schemes and mold. And hey, we're not going to be under center running 7-step only. Right?
Yeah.
I'll work with you, right? Because now my job's on the line.
We'll
run
read option. Yeah. We'll run RPOs,
right.
Which is different than read option,
yes.
I understand.
Yes.
And do stuff you're already comfortable doing because you did it in high school and in college.
Correct. And we're not going to force a square peg in a round hole. But those two guys, Jamarcus Russell and Ryan Leaf, you could argue that those were just bad scouting where you got enamored by size, arm strength, and all that.
You didn't really find out who these kids were.
No. No, and neither of them probably struggled, right?
Right.
And when they did, they were doing syrup and whatever else.
Scissor, right. And Ryan Leaf was getting drunk somewhere. Right. But, yeah, it's just fascinating to me every year, Paul, that all these people, smart people, like yourself, people smarter right. than you, if that exists, NFL guys, personnel guys,
yeah.
tape, film, interviews, you just don't know.
You just don't know.
Until that kid starts throwing on Sundays in the NFL. Right.
And, yeah, you don't know. And anybody that says they do.
They're lying.
They're lying. They have a good guess.
Because it's one of the great mysteries. And what's one of the biggest thing that what is one of the biggest things that you think throws young quarterbacks for a loop when they get to the pros that really messes them up, like, oh my God, I can't believe right. how it is
right.
up here.
Right. I think it's probably the day to day grind. Like Tuesday's player's day off. It ain't your day off. You know what I mean? Like, you know,
you're coming in, you're watching film, you're talking to coaches.
And it's probably the verbiage too, owning the playbook, I think. Those are the two big things that when like Deshaun Watson comes back and talks and he says, yeah, that's what sticks out, you know.
Okay.
It's week 12 and I'm still feeling like it's, you know, I've got to prep the same and not just roll out the same game plan, game script. And you know, because in college, everything's pretty easy for those guys.
Really?
Yeah. Like guys, like Deshaun Watson, I mean, they're just, we have better.
Because
got better dudes than you do.
Right. So Deshaun Watson at Clemson
right.
had, let's call it, 3 red alert games a year.
Correct.
Where he had to be on point because, okay, we could lose these games.
Right.
Every other game.
Right.
They're not losing if he shows up drunk. Right?
Yeah, right. Right.
And but in the pros, 16 in a row.
Yep. It's 16 in a row, and it's everybody's good.
And even worse, when you're a quarterback drafted high, you're by definition on a bad team,
yeah.
And so now you've got 16 games that are even super hard because
right.
your team's not good.
Yeah, and I think that's what we always talk about. We get together when we're hanging out, you know, Jordan, Palmer, Trent, and the other coaches that get to prep these guys, they just say it's not about how high you go. It's about fit. That's
right.
Why Jordan was so excited when Deshaun went to Houston because he had Bill O'Brien, you know. It's why you worried for Goff for a year because he was in – Fisher's offense, and then thank God McVay came in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, Goff was looking like a bust.
Trubisky has Matt Nagy. I mean,
right.
Trubisky's not
great.
Great.
But yet. Maybe he will be.
Maybe. But
he
thank
got the
God
right
Matt
guy.
Nagy came in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's all about fit. And that's where we went back to original talking about Murray. If your fit is Arizona, the best fit, that's where he probably would fit the best. But the crazy thing is they're number one. So
all right, for more information on Elite 11 quarterback competition,
yeah,
where should people go?
You can go to elite11.com.
Okay.
Search it on Twitter and Instagram, and then, you know, every year we have a show, a documentary on NFL Network, so you can go on YouTube and check that out.
And what's the documentary about? Just the kids that come through?
A lot of times it's different every year. A lot of times they focus on the journey up to there. We focus on 5 kids that they feel have great backstories. It's a TV show, so we gotta sell it to advertisers. But for the most part, they do a good job of explaining the role of the coaches and the players and the journey through the springtime, which is now, all the way into June and July when the final competition is.
And Trent Dilfer is.
Yep. He's our head football. He's our head of Elite 11 in terms of head coach.
Okay. Does he own the enterprise?
No.
Okay.
No.
But he's kind of the CEO of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
been that since how long?
I came on in 2013. He was doing it too. So 2011, he's been the head coach.
Okay.
So he's had a lot of classes. Like Jared Goff was his first year as the head coach. So
okay.
Jared Goff was 18 years old and now is Trent's first year as head coach. So it's all full circle now.
And Trent has now taken a job
yeah.
at a high school in Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
Catholic High School. There's a long feature on him that I saw in my
USA
Twitter
Today,
timeline.
Yeah.
I bookmarked it, Paul, and
yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to come back and
yeah.
read that.
Yeah.
It's interesting because Trent Dilfer, Super Bowl winning quarterback, ESPN television personality.
Correct.
You wouldn't think he would go take a job at a otherwise nondescript high school
yeah.
in Tennessee, but he has. And not to speak for him, right. but what's well, you know, what's the answer to
after
that?
After being around him for 7 years, I look at him as a mentor, right? As a husband, as a father, I look up to him a lot, and I talk to him, and we all do as young coaches, young men. It didn't surprise any of us because you can only get that head coach vibe from just quarterbacks at a camp for 3 months out of the year. He truly is a football junkie, but he wants to make an impact on young men, most importantly. And so to use his platform bigger, he needed to be a head coach of a team. And he prayed about it, and you know, he thought he had some college jobs, and they didn't work out. He turned some down, they didn't work out. I really think this is going to be his wheelhouse because he does a great job of having people own what they need to own within an organization,
okay.
but being responsible and leading people in the right direction. Not always agreeing, right? There's been some great shouting matches among coaches with Trent, but he needs to lead men based off of what God has put in his life and how he has equipped Trent to do that. That's his calling.
Well, that's going to be fun to watch. Yeah. I don't have enough time today, Paul, to get into the whole national program level of high schools.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea till I sat down and talked with you about how there are high schools in the country that play a national schedule of 4-5 games on top of their regular league schedule.
Correct.
I mean, especially crazy.
Here, especially in the WCAC here in town.
I mean,
those schools are all sponsored by big shoe companies, and they are having they have the best athletes at playing football in the area. Some kids move in from out of state. I mean, St. John's quarterback is from Hawaii, so that's crazy. You know,
poor kid went from Hawaii to DC as we sit on one of the gloomiest, grayest, wettest, horrible March days ever.
Yeah, and my buddy is my buddy Drew Amave is the reason why he's here because Drew Amave is the quarterback coach of St. John's, and he can tell the kid, hey, just move. If you're willing to move, we'll play a national schedule and get more exposure. And it's crazy. I don't know exactly where I stand on it because I still like kids to be kids.
I was going to say, at what point does it become unhealthy?
It's
almost quasi-professionalized.
Yeah, I think it's unhealthy for the people coaching because, you know, when I'm coaching a kid at John Champ, I'm not worried about getting fired because – we don't win, you know, the next game.
Right.
Now in Texas and Florida and those kind of places, that's big business.
Oh, yeah.
It means a lot. I'm not saying that's – I would love that pressure, honestly.
The Friday night light syndrome. Yeah. Hey, coach, we going to state this year?
Yeah.
Hey, coach, we going to state this year?
Texas forever.
exactly.
But there's a – you know, amateur athletics is – depending on where you look at the transfer rule in NCAA or, you know, sponsorships of high school, it's gray. It's gray.
It's big because it matters to people. It's big because the kids and the parents are passionate about it.
Yep.
And there is big money in professional sports.
Correct.
So no one's forcing this on anybody. That's
correct.
The one thing you always have to remember is that, you know, these kids, they love the game, they love competing, and they want to be great. And so there's finding ways to give them that platform.
Yeah, and if they're exposing them to
– exposing their talents.
Yeah, if they're exposing these kids to something they've never experienced, I'm all for that. And getting them out of their comfort zone and
like traveling to go play another team from the Chicago area.
Yep.
Getting on a plane, dressing up, learning how to behave, seeing another part of the country. A lot of these kids have never been on an airplane before.
Nope. And it's crazy that they're doing it at a high school level with the national schedule. But as long as kids are not being used, then I'm all for it. But it gets a little gray area when we start bringing shoe companies involved and all
I
think the goal is to try and to grow the sport, most importantly, and then create a culture that, you know, you're not putting your identity in this one thing.
Right.
You know?
All right, I got a Redskin question for you.
Oh.
My strategy as just a guy on the couch with a big mouth and a radio show is to take our lumps this year, roll Colt McCoy out as our starter, get what I call mystery meat as a backup.
Right.
Something along the lines of a Brock Osweiler.
Right.
And if we win 4 games, so be it. Correct. I want to work through what is essentially going to be a year of recovery on the Alex Smith money.
Correct.
And Alex Smith's injury is horrible, and everyone feels terrible for him. And then start fishing for the big fish.
Correct.
That are coming
there
in
are
the form of Tua, Jake Fromm,
Trevor Lawrence.
2 years from now, Trevor Lawrence, and you told me another kid who just transferred.
Yeah, Justin Fields.
Justin Fields is the real deal, you say.
Yeah. Now, people are going to argue, well, he couldn't beat out Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm is the real deal, too. You have to understand the situation where Kirby Smart's sitting, I'm trying to win a national championship, and I got a kid that just almost did it for me the year before. Justin Fields is better than Kyler Murray.
Wow.
That's my opinion.
Wow.
He is better than Kyler Murray.
So for my Redskin fans who are saying to me, I don't like your strategy.
Yeah.
Who knows if we're going to get Tua? Because I used to just say tank for Tua.
Yeah.
And I said, but there's more than that out there.
Yep.
And this year's class, maybe it'll turn out pretty good.
Yeah.
But the big fish
that
you know about and see, and you coached Tua at the Elite 11.
Yeah.
And you speak and the world of him as a person.
I speak the world of him because he is a greatest. He's a great human, and he is Tim Tebow who can actually play quarterback and own a franchise. And if anything that this franchise needs, this needs an identity jolt. Right?
Oh sure, yeah.
You know, like who is the face of our franchise? So that's the kind of kid you want. I would argue that, you know, Dwayne Haskins would accept that real quickly. He wants to be the face of a franchise. But if you look at it from your standpoint, who's to say that the kid you get in the third and fourth round is not Dak Prescott by the middle of the season? Meaning somebody gets hurt, we're down, we get a couple of good free agents, and this kid just comes in and plays. That could be
a third round hit.
Yeah, Will
second
Greer,
round hit.
Finley, Jones, whoever. But it's not a reach to say what you're saying. It's just not popular and it's not flashy. But there's a team that's won six Super Bowls that's done it non-flashy. So I seem to think they know what they're doing. And that's where player development is lacking in the league. And you need to have a lot of players to develop.
All right. When is the Elite 11 this summer?
So right now we're in the thick of it. We have regionals going on. Tomorrow we have our regional in Dallas. We'll go around the country. I know our regional for Washington, D.C. is going to be at the St. James in Springfield middle of April. I don't know the exact date. And then after those 15 regionals, we'll have a list of guys that we have invited to the finals, and that'll be 24 guys. And then we'll be out at Jerry's World and having a big week-long competition to see who's the 11. 12.
And right. what time of year?
It'll be last week of June this year.
Okay, last week of June.
And then you can anticipate.
Is that on TV?
They ESPN cut back. So we lost it. But the documentary comes out in September, and social media you can follow it all the time, and we have a great social media group there at Student Sports, and they pump out content left and right.
All right, if you need a slappy to maybe inflate the balls,
shag
balls, you know, get coffee, I will make myself available. Sounds like fun.
It's like watching it's like you literally are standing.
It is
like,
kind of cool to think, dude, there's a really good chance at least 3, 4, 5, 6 of these guys are going to be playing on my television on Sundays in a couple of years.
That's the coolest thing about it. And it's so cool to see it happen right now because a lot of these kids were my first 2 years on the circuit, and now they're
popping.
Now they're popping.
Coach Troth, it was so much fun.
Oh, man, I enjoyed
Thank
it.
Thank you for your time.
Me.
For people that want to reach out to you, do you have an email maybe?
Yeah, so I run my quarterback company is called QB Invictus, and my name on the internet, just Google it. That's the easiest
Paul
way.
Paul Troth, Troth.
Yep.
Just Google up East Carolina Pirate highlights.
Yeah.
Circa 1990.
No, 2002.
2002.
Lots of interceptions on that highlight.
Hey,
backed
man.
Up David Garrard.
You're willing to take risks, though.
I will say, yeah.
There you go.
Yep.
Backed up Garrard.
Yeah.
Nice.
He's another great human.
And you didn't make the league because of why? Politics. Just say politics. I joked that to all my ex-athlete friends. Like, just go ahead and say it was politics, man. You had the talent to be in the pros.
Yeah, no, I didn't get it done.
All right, man. Good to talk. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Steve.
Let's end on this today. You will not believe who is a paid subscriber to my podcast. You will not believe it. This, when I found this out, it floored me. I said, what? That's crazy. Ooh, Zabe, can I guess? Is it the head of ESPN? They want to hire you away on a multi-million dollar contract? No, I wish. That'd be nice. No, I found out over the weekend that my mom is a paid subscriber to the Zabecast. Totally without me finding out about it. I'm not sitting there watching the signups come in going, hey, that credit card number looks familiar. Or that name. Ma, what are you doing in here? It's not enough for mom to just listen to the free portion. My mom has given me $5 a month. So for all of you out there that listen to the free version and they go, I can't afford $5 a month. Hey, man, my mom is paying $5 a month. Yeah, no family discount there? Well, there's no family discount when my mom doesn't ask for one. I would have hooked her up with one. Shh, I want that $5. I'm getting my inheritance from my mom and dad. Knock on wood, may that not be for another 50 years. I'm getting my inheritance $5 at a time every month. So if you're listening right now, Ma, thank you for subscribing. I will try to keep my potty mouth in check. Now this is going to really get into my head thinking, you know your mom's listening to all this shit. I love my mom. She's the best. And my dad. My dad listens as well. God bless him. They finally got some warm weather in Arizona. Thank God for that. All right, that'll do it for today. Download, subscribe, like my ma. Comment and like. Tell a couple of friends. Get the Zabecast app. Premium can be had, zabe.com/premium. Podcasts are the future. They're like Netflix for your ears. Email me with topics and suggestions at zabe@yahoo.com. Now, go forth and prosper, and we will see you next time.